Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the November 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Arlen Suderman of FC Stone out of Kansas City, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can purchase your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference coming up the 24th day of November. That's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving in Normal, Illinois. The Farm Assets Conference, tickets available right now at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or 800-898-1065 during regular business hours.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, let's start with you. Were you surprised very much by the USDA numbers on Tuesday, and what was your quick assessment of the changes?
Yeah, I mean, it was not what I expected, Todd, especially with not as much reduction east of the Mississippi River. But I would say overall, the trade has been and will continue to be more focused on the dollar crude relationship, the Federal Reserve interest rate meeting around mid-December. And the report, because it did not give us a bullish surprise, is probably going to be in a mindset of just treading water and waiting for the Federal Reserve to decide if they do that supposed liftoff, which is kind of a funny term because you think liftoff is a rocket ship, but it's more like a Fred Flintstone mobile. You know, they're going to do a quarter point and probably do nothing after that. So anyway, the commodity markets, I think, have been pretty much suspended in animation waiting for that.
Yeah. We'll have foot power, but we will not have energy power for our liftoff. Arlen, you were shaking your head in agreement. Tell me more about what your thoughts are.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at the major funds, they're going to interpret supply and demand data through a filter, and that filter is driven by whether there's a positive psychology toward commodities or negative. And that right now it's negative because of what's happening with the strong dollar, expectations of a rate hike. Normally, historically, we'd expect the dollar to break lower after a highly anticipated rate hike. At this time around, I think it may stay high because we've had now Mario Draghi, head of the European Central Bank, say they're ready to expand stimulus come their December meeting. So that could put pressure on the euro and keep the dollar elevated, and that keeps the sentiment negative toward the commodity sector as a whole. The cash market's going to have to do some work to get the grain out of the farmers' hands, but the board's probably going to struggle and carve out multi-year lows here this winter if we don't have a weather problem in South America.
So we're dealing with some macroeconomic terms. Both of you, at least both Arlen and Mike, have thought that maybe we should turn to the dollar. Mike, it's related to the export market. How much of an impact does this really have? Is it because it's the marginal part of total usage that it really impacts the price as the bottom line for corn?
You can't get around the idea that the corn exports and the wheat exports have not met the earlier forecasts, even at these lower prices. Having said that, Todd, I really think it goes back to the crude oil market and the market fear in general that China is going to be an exporter of crude oil, China is going to be an exporter of steel, China may even be an eventual exporter of corn. What quality corn that would be, I can't tell you, but I think the market perception is that as long as crude oil looks weaker on weak demand globally, and that means emerging markets look weak globally, and that means the dollar looks strong globally. It's a very strong correlation on a monthly chart, and it's like a domino effect right now, if you ask me. And that's where this Fed rate liftoff, if they would come in and raise rates and then make it very clear they're not going to do anything for several months, I think the market may start to see some asset allocations, and commodities would not be looked upon as negative, even with our slower corn export pace.
So which is it? Is it crude oil or the dollar that is more important in your mind?
I would say the crude oil, because the crude oil is associated with the emerging markets, and the emerging markets are associated with emerging market ETFs, and that's where the financial markets comes in. That's where the securitization or the financialization of commodities comes in.
Okay, I'm going to stick with you because I'm still not convinced completely. And I'm thinking about this with a farmer's hat on, relatively speaking. Why is crude oil, why is the price of the dollar, when I'm only exporting something less than 2 billion bushels, and far less than 2 billion bushels, relatively speaking, out of the domestic supply?
Well, I think it goes back to over 50% of commodities are priced in the U.S. dollar. Crude oil is the number one commodity in many of these commodity baskets, or an energy basket is the majority of the percentage of these commodity index baskets. And I can just tell you the correlation is almost 95 to 97% negative between the crude oil and the dollar. So which is the dog, which is the tail? I still think, because the fear that China's slowing down is the fear that they will not need as much crude oil and steel, and they'll become exporters instead of importers. That bursts the commodity super cycle bubble, and I think the dollar follows suit.
Matt, I'm going to switch directions and come to you. Matt Bennett, of course, Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. It was a slower harvest in Iowa than many had expected, and I think that was mostly because they were just simply waiting for a crop that was awfully good to dry down. What do you hear about how good that crop was? They're now at, I think, 186. Was that the statewide yield? I can't remember quite. That seems like the right number to me for the state of Iowa. That's a big yield.
Yeah, most of the guys we talked to, we're hearing kind of a recurring theme that guys were pleasantly surprised with their corn in areas that they didn't think they were going to have that good of corn. And in areas where they thought they were going to have pretty good corn, they were overwhelmed by how good their corn was in parts of Iowa. Now, I was through there with the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and there was a lot of variability. Not as much variability as what there would be in the state of Illinois, of course, or Indiana, but there was a fair amount of variability, especially farther south in the state. And so, you know, I can buy a 186 yield from Iowa. I think it's obvious that they didn't have the crop that Illinois had last year at a 200, but I do think that they had an awfully good corn crop. And, you know, you talk to a lot of people that relay information about how much corn is on the ground in the state of Iowa, and it's a fair amount.
Put on the old hat you used to wear as an elevator operator and manager, and you're looking out at your facility and saying, I have not purchased nearly as much as I thought I would have or should have, normally can at this point in time. What are you thinking as the elevator manager at this point?
I just praise God that I'm not in the elevator business anymore, because when you're in central Illinois right now paying the kind of basis levels you're paying, and we're in a have-not area in Illinois, you know, we didn't have as good a corn across the board. Where the haves are, where in northern Iowa, Minnesota, some of that corn is going to have to find its way to areas that are in the have-nots. And so what's the basis going to end up doing in that situation? And the basis is probably going to end up breaking. So I'm not sure that it's going to break to a huge amount, but generally we see basis appreciation. So for a grain elevator who likes to hedge their grain, I don't think that he can expect that basis is going to get significantly better from the 20s and 30s and 40s over that people are bidding at this point. So, you know, from an elevator manager's perspective, there's a lot of different things I would be worrying about. For one, farmer ownership is extremely high of corn, and obviously the sentiment's not that good right now. So it's a little bit scary as to, you know, what's going to break the dam for this corn to come to market. I do think there's going to be a lot of corn that's going to be sold due to guys needing some cash here before too often. Awfully long, probably in the next 6 to 8 weeks, you know, coming up on the end of the year. And I think whenever that starts to happen, you can see basis could get pretty interesting.
So is it the farmer that's caught, the elevator managers that are caught, or both that are in caught in this process?
You know, in our neck of the woods, I think as an elevator manager, you have to be a little bit worried, you know, based upon the fact that there are people trying to figure out ways to rail corn from areas where there's really good corn to areas where they didn't have such good corn. And so, you know, if I'm an elevator manager, I'm a little bit concerned about that. And I don't know that the elevator manager's caught. He just has to be pretty careful how he plays this game this year. As far as the farmer, I think caught would probably be a pretty good word to use. I think we are probably not near to where we should be as far as our sales are concerned. I think we had ample opportunities this year. But with the really crazy weather we had, also, it was pretty tough for producers to pull that trigger at times because people didn't believe that with some areas getting 30 inches of rain in 4 or 5 weeks that we were going to have a big corn crop whenever it was that early in the crop. So, you know, I think it's a very interesting year, and it's going to be tough moving forward because I don't see any huge rally opportunity right now.
Arlen, could you put this into somewhat of a global perspective? Because I've heard more than once that there are parts of the United States where, frankly, it's easier to import corn and soybeans, meaning cheaper to import corn and soybeans from outside of the U.S. This seems just not right given the size of the crops that we have.
Well, the global market is changing, and it's not but that many years ago when U.S. corn made up 60% of the global trade. This year, USDA data would suggest 38%, and I think that's still a little bit too high. I think that'll drop down some more. And so we have a smaller and smaller share of the market, and it's becoming a little bit more like wheat growing a little bit, few more places, not quite like that, but where it starts to flow from deficit areas toward deficit areas where that may be. So if you look at exports at only 12 to 13% of total demand, and if we were to have a weather problem next year, high prices wouldn't have that much ability to shut down exports because exports aren't that high. So prices would have to put a heavier pressure than on industrial use or the ethanol use as well as feed usage, and the market would have to try to find a way to pull more corn in. The corn is there. It's from Brazil and elsewhere. Argentina, I think over the next few years, we'll see a big expansion from soybeans toward corn, depending on the November 22 elections there. And so it's going to become one of these things where ship it to where it's needed. It's going to be a little more of a challenge, though, to ship it beyond the southeast because our river system really wasn't built to move corn up the river. And so I think the basis market would have to work a little bit harder to do that. But that seems to be the direction that we're moving right now, particularly in light of a recent study from University of Illinois looking at competitive break-even rates of corn around the world.
You're talking about a complete structural change in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important for farmers to recognize that we do have a changing global marketplace, for better or for worse. We have to figure out how to make it work for us. We're not going to change it, so to speak. And so we have to make it work for us. And right now, frankly, when you look at global corn supplies, they're not overly abundant. It is a just-in-time market that we're very comfortable with. But we have some other parts of the world that are expanding corn production and probably going to continue over the long haul to expand it. And so we're going to be more competitive until we can really expand that demand base some more.
Most would think, wait a second, if we're in this position in corn, how bad of a position could the U.S. farmer be in the soy complex where more than half of the soybeans are produced outside of the United States?
Oh, and that's an excellent question. Obviously, you look at Brazil. Brazil has plenty of room to expand soybean production and has a part of is basically a national policy to expand soybean production. They've got some political issues there that could create some roadblocks to that near term. Argentina, depending on the election results in November 22, will likely see a reduction in soybean production. I expect to see demand in China continue to grow. And that whole East Asian market, I think, continued to grow. So it's going to really come down to, I think, a little bit more of an emphasis on soybean production here in the United States and whether Brazil has enough political issues and economic issues to stifle its growth or whether it's able to continue to grow. If they're able to overcome some of those economic and political issues, they're going to be the ones that probably have the better edge. And U.S. farmers are going to face tougher competition.
Mike, are you up to speed on the Argentine elections and what that might really mean to the marketplace? I'm thinking that if the party that's not in power takes power, that it may very well mean a short term, and you suggested that we would have fewer soybean acres planted, but that there may very well be a short term push of soybeans into the marketplace. Is that correct?
Yeah, I agree with Arlen, and I think this is where commodity asset allocation and El Nino are probably most needed in the bean complex relative to the corn, because globally you're seeing the corn take less of an acreage bite in 2016 versus the soybeans. Soybeans are the lower cost producing crop, and that will continue if corn prices don't rebound. And to segue into this NAFB meeting that we're down here at, Todd, I came down thinking to myself, what's the one thing I'd like to find out? And it was really about the February base price. And I have to say, I think between the crop insurance seller, the seed seller, the input seller, and the farmer, obviously, and the lender, this is probably the most important February base crop year that we're going to have in 20 years I've been doing this, excuse me, simply because if it is not good, there's going to be some really hard decisions that are going to have to be made come March 15th, I think.
Things like what?
Things like you're not going to get the financing you thought you were going to get. Things like I'm not going to take as much crop insurance as I thought I was going to get. This is a ripple effect. I mean, think about the multiplier effect of the farmer who spends a dollar and essentially throws out $1.20 to $1.25 into the economy. Reverse that, where the farmer spends 85 cents and ends up hurting the market by 1.25% more than that. So this is where a year, if the February base price doesn't come back in and help us, or the commodity asset allocation doesn't happen at the right time, or El Nino weather doesn't happen at the right time, you've got some really hard decisions to make, and I sense it here at this meeting.
You know, whenever you're trading 25 cents under last year's spring insurance price with input prices basically being steady year on year, you can't really expect fringe areas to be too excited about planting corn. You can't really expect guys who are strapped for cash. And let's just be honest about it. We've extrapolated a lot of capital out of the farmers' hands in the last 18 months. That's no secret. And so, you know, bankers are in a situation, from what I'm told, with a couple of the banks that I deal with. You know, when examiners came in this past summer, some ratios were not the way they wanted to see them. And so moving forward, a guy that, you know, was borrowing $500,000, he may get $375,000 this year, kind of like Mike's alluding to. And so if that's the situation, then he may have his hand forced as far as what he's going to end up planting. Even if the ROI looks better on corn than what it does beans, you may be, while we're talking, you may be SOL there.
Where does wheat play into this global game? Because it used to be that wheat was the de facto leader most of the time on the global stage. But that doesn't appear to be the case anymore.
No, and it seems like we've had 2 years in a row now, two wheat crops in a row where quality's been an issue, and it's just kept it in the feed grain side.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's grown so many places around the world right now that you have to have a more widespread type of global weather pattern to really threaten supplies. And if you look at supply and demand for the world standpoint, we'll have a couple big years that build up supplies, but most years we actually produce less than we consume of wheat. It's just that we have those periodic big years where weather globally is pretty good and builds up supply. And right now, we are the world storehouse of wheat. The biggest problem right now is hard red winter wheat. It's tough for wheat to sustain a rally if hard red winter doesn't lead. And hard red winter is not in any position to lead right now with a seven-month surplus and the bulk of that being low quality. So that's a real problem for U.S. wheat.
Mike, I want to follow up with you, and maybe somebody else will know the answer to this. So how did wheat get into this position where it is the United States is the storehouse for wheat? It's grown across the planet. What was the process that brought it there? And is that the structural change that's happening either, well, actually with soybeans and or corn at this point?
I think it could be, Todd, for the soybeans because, again, I think, like Arlen was talking about, wheat is the global crop. The Federal Reserve monetary policy, I think, is the lion's share of why the wheat is doing what it's doing as far as why the United States is not the big seller. The dollar's too strong. There's too many competitors, and the wheat and the crude oil are acting very similarly, and you can almost see on a daily basis when the crude oil market is down, the wheat takes notice of that first and of all the grains.
Again, we're talking about complete structural change in the marketplace.
Yeah, we really are. I just want to agree with Mike on the crude oil because as I look at money flow in the broader commodity indices of which the grains are a part, crude oil is the indicator. It's a lead indicator for the funds. If they want to put money in or pull it out or go long or short those indexes. And I'd say this fall in particular, we've seen that influence on grain prices to be stronger than what we normally see.
this is not a very happy commodity week at this point. As a producer, somebody who has to compete on this stage, what considerations are you thinking about at this point? You've got land that's very high priced. Fortunately, you probably don't have a lot of debt at this time, but you might be building debt in the next 2 years along with this one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple of things I'd like to point out. First of all, after I saw the numbers on Tuesday, if I would have seen what the corn market's done since then, I think it's been a pleasant surprise that corn has reacted the way that it has, personally. All is not lost, but obviously we're under cost production for a lot of guys right now. It's an ugly situation. It's going to be, when you talk about a fundamental shift like we've been talking about, you know, us going from an era of historic profitability to what we're going to right now is going to be something that is not much fun for a whole lot of people, and it's going to take a fundamental shift in a lot of people in rural America. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to change. A lot of people are going to have to adjust their expectations on return on investment on farmland and things like that, because if this market does not get a shot in the arm from South American weather issues, you know, I have a hard time thinking that we're going to be able to turn this thing around anytime soon. With that being said, I kind of like to think that it's going to be really hard for us to build corn acreage a whole lot this year. We've been talking about it a little bit. I just don't see that we're going to be able to do that. So, you know, what are we going to have happen if, you know how it is around home, Todd, it's drier than a bone. And so a lot of these guys have been talking about potential weather issues next year. I mean, this will be an entirely different conversation in 8 months if we're in the middle of a drought. You know, there's no question about it. And so, you know, I don't want guys to just want to go jump off the grain bin ever. I don't want to say just yet. Let's say ever. But let's give this just a little bit of time. And I don't want to get too aggressive whenever we're a quarter under last year's spring insurance price. I'm going to give a little bit of time. And I do think better days, will hopefully be here at some point in the near future. But I think that it's gonna take some weather issues.
All right, let's transition to really pricing and marketing some commodities. Your best thoughts at this point, producers? We've talked a little bit about this up front, probably holding more corn than they usually do, certainly holding more soybeans than they have in the past.
Yeah, I think, from what I've seen, as a percentage basis, it's definitely been guys are holding a whole lot more corn than what they are beans, relatively speaking. I would say, as far as the beans go, I think a lot of guys in our neck of the woods beating themselves up over not selling $9 beans because they had several opportunities to do so. But at this point, one thing I really want to encourage a guy to do is to stay, you know what, if it's $8.50, can I make money at $8.50 beans? Because if I can make money at $8.50 beans, there's nothing wrong with getting rid of those beans. And if you want to assume ownership on the board, you can do so fairly cheaply. As far as the corn goes, it's a very similar discussion. You know, guys had a chance at $4 corn. Obviously, we're not there at this point, but in our neck of the woods, again, the basis is so strong. I've tried to tell guys, the market's trying to tell us that they want your corn right now. Basis is probably 20 cents better than what a lot of guys thought it was going to be, so why not move the corn, and then you can invest 10 cents of free money into that market because you got such a good basis.
If I can sell beans and make up all of my bills through the end of the calendar year, as opposed to selling corn, should I do it that way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that a lot of it depends upon what's the situation on corn. Can you pay all of your bills on corn, too? And so I would probably be more of a seller of beans than corn. If I'm going to be storing something in my bin and ready to wait it out, I'm probably going to be more patient with corn personally.
I'd say really monitor that basis market. Now, what we're seeing is a little bit different perspective than what Matt gave, is we're seeing farmers turn down for grain they are moving now, saying, can you delay those payments till after the first of the year to the new tax year, which suggests that maybe there's a little bit more health out there than what we anticipated in farm country. And so I anticipate the farmers are going to be slow to sell throughout the winter. We'll probably see that basis be strong, but then really collapse this summer if we don't see a weather problem. Now, from the corn standpoint, if we do have adverse weather, and right now that's really 50-50 depending on El Nino's peak time and how quickly it transitions into a cooler phase, if we have that adverse weather, global supplies are tight enough that we could see a quick reaction in the market. If we don't have it, this futures market continues to struggle. Now, you mentioned the reaction of the board. I agree, it wasn't much of a reaction from a bearish report, but that's because we've already priced in so much bearish attitude toward commodities as a whole. So I don't expect the board to drop too much further below where we are, just kind of leak lower and be vulnerable to that and carve out multi-year lows this winter. Longer term, low prices, it always looks bearish at the bottom. But we're really going to have to be astute and not take anything for granted. And you've heard it before, hope is not a marketing plan. Take advantage of strong basis when it's offered you.
I can only add to what Arlen and Matt talked about, Todd. I think I'm in a mindset that we're more range-bound, $3.45 to $4 for March corn, $8.35 to $9 for March beans. I think the cycles are still on the side of the commodities as we get into 2016. And I've been encouraging producers after this last USDA report, with the Fed in mind, that mid-December time period is going to be extremely important. Keep in mind, last year at this time, corn went from about 365 to about 417 going into the end of 2014. So I think the seasonals are also more in favor of some type of get the grain out of the farmer's hands before we turn the calendar year. So I think be like the other guy said, be vigilant for those types of markets. And I think one of the greatest things to do this year, if you are light on 15 corn sales, light on 15 bean sales, use rallies for 16 and get some 16 locked in, and then you've got your natural long position, your natural call already in the bin. I think that's a very useful marketing plan.
Mike Zuzulo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, joined here on this November 12 edition of Commodity Week by Arlen Suderman, with FC Stone out of Kansas City, and Matt Bennett, who's with Channel Seeds, and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.